The only way this business survives is based on addicting citizens and based on exploiting citizens financially. The casual gambler is irrelevant to the business model. You pay even if you don't play, you know, meaning that you're paying higher taxes over the long term for less services.
They're manipulating people and they're doing it deceptively. And the reason why they're allowed to do this is because state governments are a partner to this. We call the problem of predatory gambling America's most neglected major problem.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the One Day at a Time podcast. Today's guest is Les Burnell. He's the director of Stop Predatory Gambling, and we're going to be talking all about what his group does, what their messaging is, and what's been going on with gambling in the United States. Les, thank you for joining.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And, you know, we met probably, what, a little over 2 years now, probably right around 2 years back at an event in New Jersey. And now we've been doing a little bit of work together ever since. I've always admired your passion for what you do, and I'm excited to give you space to share about that here today.
Well, I appreciate that. I think you've got a lot of young people who, you know, you've educated about the impact of gambling addiction in society today and how they can deal with it. And I think, you know, our work is very much related to that educational message that you've been promoting for a long time. And hopefully we'll have a good discussion today.
Yeah, 100%. The overlap's always been really clear. We don't want to see people addicted to gambling. We don't want to see gambling ruining lives. You run a group called Stop Predatory Gambling. What is predatory gambling? And what is, you refer to a lot, commercialized gambling?
Yeah. So I define predatory gambling as such. So let me first say what it's not is predatory gambling. It's not the Friday night poker game. You know, it's not Catholic Church bingo. It's not your March Madness bracket. You know, it's not a friendly wager on the golf course. It's not your Super Bowl office pool. It's not all those things. Those are social forms of gambling. What we oppose is predatory gambling. And predatory gambling is when state governments partner with powerful gambling corporations, okay, to use commercialized gambling. That's the key word here, commercialized gambling, okay, to exploit and defraud citizens and their communities. When gambling is run as a business, okay, it creates a predatory and adversarial relationship between the gambling operator and the gambler, okay? So it's the big con, all right? And that's what we're talking about. It's not what you do privately. It's doing gambling as a business for profit. So have a Vegas in America where people got to hop on a plane and get out there. But the question is, should Las Vegas be on Main Street? You know, and now in today's world, should we have a Las Vegas casino in every home, every dorm room, every office, every smartphone in our country where there's an internet connection? And the answer clearly is no on that, because it has incredible financial impacts and public health impacts. And we all pay for that.
Can casinos survive without gambling addiction?
Yeah, so I think the evidence is pretty clear. And not just whether it's casinos, state lotteries, online gambling, the business model for commercialized gambling, when you're doing gambling as a business for profit, has always been based on the out of control player. With casinos, we've known for at least more than 20, 25 years now that up to 60% of commercialized casino profits come from citizens who are addicted to gambling. And the flip side of that is, you know, we hear a lot about these calls for responsible gambling, and you know, we got these hotline numbers and all and so on. Like, we're going to give the appearance that we're protecting people. But the question I always love to ask people who, whether they're gambling lobbyists or legislators who carry the water for the gambling industry, or even many of you know, the folks who are in the lead these problem gambling councils at the state and national level, one of the questions I always pose to them is, how much money does the gambling industry make from citizens who practice so-called responsible gambling behavior? And the best fact on that is a woman from named Dr. Natasha Scholl, who is at NYU, wrote kind of the definitive book on gambling technology in America a few years back. It was called Addiction by Design. And in that, she cites a study that showed that 75% of citizens walking into a casino were so-called casual gamblers. You know, they call and followed the so-called responsible gambling behavior. They made up 4% of revenues, you know, 4%. So the casual gambler is irrelevant to the business model. For your viewers to think about here is, we can already gamble ourselves privately, right? So this isn't about what you do privately. If you want to gamble, do your thing. This is about a government program. In order to be a gambling interest in this country, a commercialized gambling interest, whether it's a lottery, casino, or online operator, you have to partner with state government. Otherwise, the business is illegal. So the state's in on this. The only way this business survives is based on addicting citizens, based on exploiting citizens financially. So not everyone, you know, who has issues with this is necessarily addicted to it, but almost everyone also suffers financial harm too. The idea is let people do what they want and take state governments out of this business and put them back on the side of the American people.
So a common thing that I'll hear is like, we need to have gambling because it funds state initiatives. The states are making tons of tax revenue from gambling, whether it be the lottery, casinos, sportsbooks. It's always pitched as like a really good thing. Is there any truth to that? And are there any drawbacks at the same time from legalizing gambling in these states?
Yeah. So one of the themes of the why, part of the reason why we do this work is commercialized gambling as a business itself is a con. It's a big con. But many of the arguments that gambling lobbyists and legislators use to promote commercialized gambling are also part of the big con. And one of those arguments is the idea that this is going to be a good revenue source. Like, they know this is somehow funding teachers and or property tax relief. And this goes back from the very beginning of when they introduced commercialized gambling in this country, at least in the modern era. So in the late 1960s, there's a very famous quote from a congressman in New Jersey who was, you know, carrying the water for a state lottery in New Jersey. And he's quoted in one of the state papers in New Jersey saying, you know, legalize the lottery and like, we're going to change taxation. Like, you're not going to have to pay taxes anymore. You know, you can have all these services. You won't have to pay for anything. That was like, you know, like 1969, so what, almost more than 50 years ago. That's in New Jersey. Like, New Jersey has like the highest tax rate, almost the highest tax rate of any state in the country. They're a state with a continual financial mess, you know, and they have some of those extreme forms of gambling of any state in this country. Like, a commercialized gambling as a revenue source for government is the ultimate budget gimmick. You know, you're paying higher taxes for less services over the long term. And that's not me saying this. Like, the independent research from this, you know, there's an incredible researcher who works out of the Urban Institute, highly respected think tank in this country, named Dr. Lucy Dedayan, for more than a decade now has done really good independent research. And by independent, meaning it's not funded by, you know, gambling interests, but independent research that shows over the long term that commercialized gambling revenue, it goes down. Because the only way you can sustain commercialized gambling as a revenue source is you have to add new and more extreme forms of commercialized gambling into the public square. So, you know, 40 years ago, they had once a week tickets on the lottery for a buck each. Now states are selling $100 scratch off tickets, you know, brick and mortar casinos, you know, within like a short drive of most people where they live today in this country. You know, and now they've got online gambling, which essentially is opening a Las Vegas casino in every home, dorm room, office in the country that has an internet connection. So, you know, it just continues to metastasize like a cancer in this country. And it's all being driven, but there's no grassroots movement for, you know, by citizens demanding online casinos or demanding a casino in their community. This is driven by some of the most powerful financial interests in the country in partnership with public officials, the establishment of public officials of both political parties in states. So that's like one of the few things that the political parties can agree on is we need more predatory gambling in our country. And it's been an epic policy failure. So, and for all the people who may be watching this who don't gamble, and you think, well, how does this affect me? You pay even if you don't play, you know, meaning that you're paying higher taxes over the long term for less services. So it's the ultimate budget gimmick, and it's costing all of us.
What does the implementation of a casino or a commercialized gambling entity do in an area that previously didn't have it?
The impacts of a local casino, you know, building it nearby you, you know, where citizens are going several times a week. But when you put a casino on Main Street, you know, in the heart of your downtown or, you know, the heart of your urban area, it has a major impact on the public health of local citizens. Because as we talked about earlier here, you have a business model that's based on addiction. And so it creates an enormous amount of addiction in many instances. I guess for the whole region as a whole, like if you're worried about issues like crime, fentanyl trafficking, human trafficking, you know, all these illicit businesses that have create so much problems in our communities, like if you run one of those criminal rings, you love the introduction of a casino near where you live because it allows you to wash that money. Money laundering and casinos are married at the hip.
In addition to being a source of major money laundering operations, they also act as a meeting ground for human trafficking. Because in a casino, all anybody cares about, the people running the casino, if they're making money.
Can we talk about something real for a minute? If your gambling has started to feel less like fun and more like stress, trust me, you're not alone. Millions of us know what it's like to say, just one more bet, or feel that urge that's really difficult to explain. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Evive, a sponsor of today's video. Think of it as having a recovery companion right in your pocket, someone who actually understands what you're going through. No lectures, no pressure, just practical tools and genuine support when those challenging moments hit. Download Evive now and you'll get guaranteed free access through 2026. Not a trial or a limited version, but the complete platform, completely free. Because Evive believes that everyone deserves access to support that works for them. Download Evive today and take the first step towards changing your relationship to gambling. Evive is only available in select countries.
That's fascinating too to me, because a casino is what probably the place that has the most cameras per square inch of facility in the world, I would imagine. So it's just fascinating that the cameras don't give a crap about what's going on unless it has to do with the bottom line.
Yeah, well, your point is a theme that's consistent through this whole issue, because the gambling industry, if they were part of this conversation, they would say, you know, Rob, we're the most regulated industry in the country. We're the most regulated business of anybody. And when they say that, they're not, no one's regulating it to protect your family, to protect your community. They're regulating this. No one's regulating to say, are these forms of gambling that we're pushing, are they safe for the public? You know, is the fact that you make 100 bets a day, you know, is that a dangerous thing? No one's regulating it for that. When the states regulate this and when casinos have all these cameras, they're doing it to make sure they're getting their money, that no one's taking money from them. Like, they're doing it to protect their interests, not you or your family. That's, again, that's another reason why, you know, the legalization of commercialized gambling in America today, as it currently sits, has been a major public policy failure. We call the problem of predatory gambling America's most neglected major problem, because it intersects with so many other issues that we care about as a society, regardless of what your political stripes are. Commercialized gambling, it intersects with so many of them. And this last point on this, in the big picture, you know, to help you kind of process this, and we don't see it this way, but when you think about what else does American government promote to the American people, what's the number one thing that we as a society, as a government, federal or state level, promotes to the American people? What it is, it's commercialized gambling. The relentless lottery advertising and these other forms of commercialized gambling, like, these are all an extension of a government program that's advertising and marketing this. And so that's what we incentivize to the American people. When I was a kid, I'm, you know, considerably older than you, Rob. You know, when I was growing up, like, they used to run ads with John Wayne. He'd come on camera and he'd say, you know, invest in your country, you know, buy U.S. savings bonds. You know, when was the last time you heard public officials stand up and say, hey, you know, save money to get ahead? Like, you know, we're always fixated on how much people earn, like raising the minimum wage and lowering taxes and all that stuff matters, right? You know, those things matter. But the other half of that equation is, it's not just how much you earn, it's how much you keep. And so, you know, half the country has all kinds of assets, like retirement funds. They have emergency fund for a crisis. They own a home, many of them second homes, et cetera. Half the country doesn't have anything. They have no assets, no retirement funds. They don't have an emergency fund. They barely have a few hundred bucks for a crisis. And all those communities, what we're pushing these people is not encouraging them to build assets and build wealth, which is the traditional way to expand the middle class. It's, hey, go out and buy a $100 scratch-off ticket, or go to wash your laundry at the local laundromat. There's 5 slot machines in there. You know, maybe you can, you know, try your luck. Maybe you'll get luck. Get hot. You know, that's all an extension of a government program. Think of the change in American society. So we wonder why there's so much anger and frustration with government, you know, of all economic classes. Like, when you have the public voice of government pushing gambling on people, which most of the public knows it's a con, it just creates this incredible cynicism, you know, because what we incentivize to the American people, it shapes our character as a nation. And so, you know, and it gives rise to all these other predatory businesses that cheat and exploit the American people.
Yeah, it's set up as like us versus them, and the government is supposed to be an extension of our voice, of our, we're supposed to be choosing our representation, but
And more importantly, and this is why for me, it's not about, again, this has never been about whether or not people gamble, you know, privately. Like, this is a government program. And so we, how the impact this has on our democracies, in a democracy, like there is an elemental covenant between the governed and its citizens. And in order, and this government program, this is the only government program that exists, predatory gambling, where in order for government to make money and to succeed in this government program, we collectively as a society, we have to lose. It's like putting Dracula in charge of the blood bank. You know, they have a vested interest in seeing us fail.
Yeah. Which means they have a vested interest in advertising disingenuously. And it leads me into what I think is my next question. How the hell are these gambling ads legal? Because we look at them on TV and they're misrepresenting the odds and the reality of winning, but they're not regulated by anyone. If we look at a financial institution, if they put out a commercial, it says, hey, you might lose your investment if you buy this product. We look at a gambling commercial, it says, hey, loser, call us if you have a problem. How is this legal?
Yeah. So I would use a much stronger word than they're advertising disingenuously. I would say that they're advertising willfully, deceptively, and manipulatively. Like, they're manipulating people and they're doing it deceptively. And the reason why they're allowed to do this is because state governments are a partner to this. Like, if Purdue Pharma or Philip Morris, you know, other predatory industries over the years or last 30 years, like, you've seen, you know, every state attorney general in this country will have, you know, brings litigation against these harmful industries to stand up for the American public. Because state governments are a partner to this, like, there has never been a state attorney general in this country of either party in the last 30 years since we've been rolling out all these extreme forms of predatory gambling who has ever brought consumer protection litigation against a predatory gambling operator once that company's business has been legalized by the state. Because, hey, you just lost $100,000. You just lost your kids' college tuition. You don't have any recourse. Here at the AG's office, that's an issue for your state gambling commission. State lotteries under the Federal Trade Commission are exempt from FTC regulations for advertising and marketing. Casinos and so on, they have no legal duty of care to their customers that every other business has to follow. And that's because they have a unique partnership with state governments on this. And so the way we address the advertising and marketing is ultimately going to need a federal solution. It's going to be the courts, but it's really also going to be the federal government, because the state governments are so much in bed with this industry. And the gambling interests are arguably the most powerful special interest in almost every state capital in our country today. Like, that it's not going to happen in state capitals. It's going to happen at the federal level, and it's going to happen in our courts.
Yeah, I think in terms of factors to motivate change, a couple of years ago, we didn't have what we have right now, which is that people are just absolutely sick of seeing these ads. They've seen them on repeat everywhere they look for, what, the last 5-6 years at this point. And people are finally getting to this point where everyone seems to know that gambling ads are predatory. That's what I'm feeling like we're reaching, but there's still just nothing being done. As you mentioned, it has to go through the federal level. What is the first step to making a change in this kind of action?
Yeah, well, in my view, priority one is to get congressional investigative hearings where they bring all of these gambling executive CEOs before Congress under oath and make them answer questions about their business practice. Mm-hmm. So the reason why this is an issue that's so hard to get momentum on, like, for change, is because as we've talked about throughout our conversation thus far, like, state governments are a partner to this. So, like, if you're a U.S. senator or a U.S. rep, and you start taking on the gambling industry, like, so it's, you know, and this is true for most states, but let's take a state like West Virginia, okay? You know, West Virginia as a state gets more than 10% of its revenue, of its overall government revenue, 10% of it comes from commercialized gambling that it sponsors. Mm-hmm. So, like, you start taking on this industry, you're getting calls from, like, your governor's office, your Speaker of the House at the state level, state Senate presidents, like, hey, you know, Representative Jones, like, you know, this is a revenue source for us. You're going to make us raise taxes if we, you know, which isn't really true. We'd actually be paying lower taxes. But the reality, that's the perception, that somehow if you touch this third rail issue, that, you know, all these states are going to, you know, have to raise taxes. So that's a big piece of it. But the other flip of that coin is gambling interests themselves. You know, as I said, they're arguably like one of the most powerful special interest groups in this country. You know, Sheldon Adelson's former, the late Sheldon Adelson's casino company, Sands, is one of the most powerful companies in the world. They fund a huge amount of political activity, both at the state level and federal level. Huge players, like, you know, so you're taking on this industry that is so wired politically that, you know, it's very tough for congressional leadership to take action. So that's why we as citizens, you know, you want to see change happen. It's not going to come from, no one else is going to come to our rescue. Like you and I and the people that follow you and so on, like it's on our shoulders to take action on this. You know, that's what's going to happen. We're going to demand reform, you know, bring litigation. We have to act with what's called direct action. I mean, you got to do some forms of protest as well. You know, you got to use every means necessary to educate people.
So one of the things that shocked me when I started doing work in the gambling addiction recovery space is that a lot of the groups that are doing work to try to help gambling addicts are somehow funded by the casino industry. Maybe it was written into the laws of their state. Maybe it was just a donation. Who knows? But do you feel like that can bias or change some of the research that we're seeing on rates of gambling addiction in the United States?
That's a really important question. And it's important to have some context for how we got to that point. Your generation, if you're under 30 years old, like you guys have grown up where like there's been casinos in every street corner and big time $100 scratch off tickets are normalized. The truth is, this is all relatively new from over the last 30 years. The idea that big time commercialized gambling is at the center of American life, like that is totally different. It used to be on the fringe of American society. And it's really important to understand the historical context in this. They got rolling at the same time that the tobacco industry in this country was under incredible fire from U.S. Congress. So many of you, even if you're not old enough to be alive when this happened, you'll have seen the famous pictures of the casino, the tobacco executives before Congress, you know, with their hands raised, taking an oath, saying, you know, our product is not addictive, you know. Meanwhile, they had all these documents, you know, internally that showed that they knew darn well that their products were addictive. And that just, you know, led all kinds of scandal. And so as the gambling industry came of age during that era, the leadership of the gambling lobbying movement in this country, they say, hey, we're not going to say our product isn't addictive. We're just going to say, you know, what we're going to do is we're going to minimize how addictive it is. We're going to say, you know, we're going to minimize those statistics and how addictive it is. So, and the way they had to do that is twofold. Is one is they have to control the academic research into addiction, right? So that's why they came up with all these categories. The, you know, person at risk for a gambling addiction, a person with a problem gambling behavior, pathological gambling behavior. So they split it all into these categories, right? As if so now they come up with like, oh, just 1% are pathological gamblers, like, and those are your most extreme. Like they come up with all these gimmick numbers. They define the facts on this, and so that was been a deliberate effort since the early 1990s to fund the research into gambling addiction in this country. So that's, you know, that's priority one, is we have to change that situation. We need independent research in this country into the impacts, the public health impacts of commercialized gambling. And that'll be a profound change. But that's number one, how we got here. And number two is they also said, in addition to controlling the research, the gambling industry is what drove the movement against tobacco was the public health community. So they're like, hey, while this issue gets rolling, we don't have that many gambling addicts in the country. We know we're going to create a hell of a lot of addicts. We're going to control the treatment community. They fund the National Council on Problem Gambling. They fund the state problem gambling councils to make them reliant on gambling revenue. So you'll have the leadership of these organizations that will stand up before legislature. This is a harmful product, but we don't take a position. You know, we're not going to stand up and stop you from doing this. But if you're going to do it, you know, just put a little money aside for treatment. And it's the equivalent of an argument of, imagine you had a really dangerous cliff and you build a highway, a high speed highway that goes right up to the cliff and over the cliff. Right. But instead of like putting guardrails at the end of the cliff to keep people from going over, it's like, we're just going to allow, you know, states and these powerful gambling corporations to keep running, you know, driving millions and millions of Americans over this cliff, but we're going to put a few ambulances at the bottom of the cliff just to catch the bodies as they fall off. And that's what we're going to focus on, the treatment. By that point, you know, this is a product where, as you know, like you can't really treat an addicted gambler. Like the only real cure for it is just being exposed to the access of it, like to preventing being consistently access to it. It's a really hard product. It's a really hard addiction to break. That's why it's one of the highest rates of suicide in our country, the highest rate of suicide of any addiction, because it's a really difficult addiction to break. So the gambling industry has controlled both the public health research, but as well as the public health community. And so you have a whole, you know, thousands and thousands of public health, you know, professionals who like are indebted now as a revenue source to the casino industry. And that needs to change. That's another big part. We need independent funding sources for the, there's a lot of good people in those councils too.
Absolutely.
You know, a lot of good people, but the issue is they're you know, conflicted because they can't come out and say the truth that needs to happen on this issue. And we need those folks, you know, for the good work that they do to stand up and put a stop to what's happening in our country, the harm that's being caused to millions and millions of Americans.
Struggling with an addiction can make you feel like you're all alone, but you don't have to do this by yourself. At Bright Choice Recovery, a family-owned and operated treatment center in New Jersey, we're here for you, and we are dedicated to helping you break free from addiction and reclaim your life. Whether you're struggling with substances or a gambling addiction, this is the spot for you. With personalized care, real support, and a team that truly understands, we're here to walk with you on this journey to recovery. Because recovery is possible, and it all starts with the right choice. Check us out today, because your future is worth fighting for. When looking at the research, if you look at almost any other country, you can find a rate in which people develop a gambling addiction. And it's as high in some countries as, you know, 8-9%. In the United States, when you look at the rate of gambling addiction, they give you a range, and the range is 2-7%. That's tens of millions of people within that range to account for, that we don't know where it actually lies within that.
And that's all true. But the other piece of it is I like to use a term referred to as the gambling addiction severity index. Mm-hmm. You know, like what drove the impact on the public health impacts against tobacco wasn't just the impact that tobacco had on the individual smoker. It was on the impact of a so-called secondary smoke, all the impact it had on the people around that smoker. So for predatory gambling, like you have, you know, the research out of Europe and so on has shown that 13% to 19% of citizens are part of that so-called problem gambling or gambling addiction severity index. Because if you come down with a gambling addiction, and anyone who's a gambling, you know, addicted to gambling or has been addicted can relate to this. It's not just you who's affected, the addicted gambler. It's your loved ones, your coworkers, your friends, you know, your neighbors. Like, everyone pays the price. Anyone who cares about you, is connected to you, many times they get sucked into this and often pay a huge price. You know, so that means 13 to 19% of the population is part of this gambling addiction severity index. So when you take those numbers, you're looking at more than, you know, 40 million Americans, conservatively, who are affected by predatory gambling in America today. And that's why it's another reason why we call this America's most neglected major problem.
That is a huge number. So speaking of large numbers, what's often glossed over by states that legalize gambling is the damage that can come financially from gambling addiction in that state. And the NCPG, the National Council on Problem Gambling, said that in 2023, the societal cost in the United States of gambling addiction was $14 billion. Les, is this number on a trajectory to keep increasing, or do you think things are going to get better?
Yeah. So that $14 billion is literally just the tip of the iceberg, because, you know, anyone who understands gambling addiction, you know, knows the research on this. Something like more than 90% of citizens who are addicted to gambling never even come forward for help. So the actual amount of people that are coming forward for help, like, are making up that $14 billion for gambling addiction treatment. So you're just getting the tip of the iceberg. So the actual cost, if we actually meaningfully treated gambling addiction in this country, like, you're looking at probably over $100 billion of public health investment you'd have to do. So, and the cure for this is just eliminate these extreme forms of gambling in the public square. Like, this is a man-made problem. This is a government-made problem. You know, this didn't exist like this 40 years ago. Gambling addiction existed, but it was on the fringe of society. You know, now it's an epidemic that's metastasizing across our country, especially for young males, you know, the under 35 demographic. And the other big number, in addition to the cost of gambling addiction that we haven't touched on yet, is just the amount of personal financial wealth that citizens lose. So over the next 5 years, the American people are on course to lose more than $1 trillion of their personal wealth to commercialized gambling. $1 trillion of personal wealth. And just put that in numbers you can relate to. So I think we're going to talk about 30 minutes here. Like, that breaks down to like $300,000 every minute that people are losing. So we're going to talk for 30 minutes. That's $9 million that the American people have lost in the course of our conversation today. Like, that's huge amounts of personal wealth that citizens are losing. That's life-changing financial losses. So when we have these big national debates, you know, again, why this is America's most neglected major problem, we're having these huge national debates. How do we expand the middle class? You know, how do we pursue this wealth inequality in our country? You know, how do we stabilize low-income families, et cetera? Whatever the issue may be, like, it relates to predatory gambling. If we just cut the amount of gambling losses that the American people are suffering by 50%, okay, cut it in half over the next 5 years, that's $500 billion you put back into the daily lives of the American people, a disproportionate amount of whom are low income. There's no policy reform from either political party that comes within 1,000 miles of making more of a difference in the lives of everyday Americans than just simply that. Get rid of the $100 scratch-off tickets, get rid of the ability to make 100 bets a day that these government programs are pushing in partnership with these gambling corporations, like, you know, get rid of slot machines and laundromats. Like, it's outrageous. Like, you just cut those losses in half, you know, it's transformative.
We had spoken in the past and I had asked you, like, Les, there's 38 states and DC that have legalized online gambling. We're talking about $1 trillion being lost over the next 5 years. It seems like the genie is out of the bottle here. What can really be done to stop the growth of predatory gambling in the United States?
So I love that question. But instead of saying the genie's out of the bottle, I would phrase it as, because the other way that people phrase it is like, Les, isn't the toothpaste out of the tube? You know, so forget this is gambling for a second, okay? If there was a toothpaste in our country that was found to be toxic, that was harming the lives of more than 40 million Americans in a profound way, causing life-changing addictions, life-changing financial losses, we wouldn't stand up and say, hey, you know, will we put the toothpaste back in the tube on this? We would say, we would take that tube of toothpaste, we would throw it in the trash, you'd have every state attorney general would bring litigation against the people that made that toothpaste and hold them financially liable for the harm they caused. You know, like, we wouldn't say, let's just keep using this toothpaste. And so this has been, commercialized gambling in America has been a massive public policy failure. You know, government's experiment with gambling has failed. And so the solution is time to reform our laws in meaningful ways that if you want to gamble, you know, privately, knock yourself out, allow small unlicensed gambling games, you know, but what makes, when we talk about commercialized gambling, we're talking about running gambling as a business. You being the gambling house. And that's what was illegal in America. It wasn't your ability to gamble as an individual. It was you did not have the ability to run a gambling house. And because when you have a gambling house, unlike any other business, there's a predatory and adversarial relationship between the gambling company and the customer. That doesn't exist. So they're trying to take you down. That doesn't exist for any other business in our country. So, and that will never change. And that's why when people say we can regulate this and so on, you know, allow people to do what they want privately, get state governments back on the side of the American people and protect the public from these predatory industries that are causing incredible financial harm and public health harm for millions and millions of Americans.
So Les, to close out, like, what is your mission and your hope for the future of America if we're able to take action and create a better society?
Yeah, I think if you're somebody in this, I say this, regardless of what your political stripes are, because this is, if you're a Republican or you're a Democrat, like, this should be one of your issues. If you care about the kind of society that we're building, if you want to live in a society where, you know, we can't guarantee fair outcomes, but most reasonable people can agree that most people should have a fair shot of opportunity, right, to make the most of yourself. If you agree with those principles, if you agree and want to build a society where we just don't care about ourselves, but we also have a society where we care about our neighbor. This problem, it intersects with all of those values. You know, this is a fight. Our fight isn't against gambling. Our fight is against greed, the greed of commercialized gambling operators. And it's a fight against the greed of media companies that are pushing this stuff. But it's also a fight against those politicians of both parties who lust for more power. You know, those are the villains in this. And so if you want to make us America better and get us, you know, back on the right track as a society, like, it runs through changing what is today the public voice of American government, which is gambling advertising and marketing. It's taking government out of the gambling business and putting it back on the side of the American people. And it will make a huge transformation in direction of our society and the kind of society that we live in.
Les, thank you once again for joining. If you're interested in finding out more about what Stop Predatory Gambling does, then check the description of this video for a link to their website. And also, I want you to check out a video of someone who's in recovery from a gambling addiction to kind of illustrate the points that we talked about today. Let's keep getting better together, one day at a time.